Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 78. Dave, it's Friday, February 17th. The Pirates are about to open camp down in Florida. The Steelers continue to kind of make news, and we spent a lot of time Tuesday talking about what's going on with management, the new hire of Todd Haley, the Art Rooney II, his involvement in the decisions that have been made. Kevin Colbert has really seemed to be front and center this week, giving interviews across the board to the various radio networks and media outlets in Pittsburgh, talking the company line. And along with that, he's getting asked a lot of questions about Mike Wallace and his status as a restricted free agent. And the national media has picked up on this, and I'm pretty sure Adam Schefter is reading your blog, because you put a great post up yesterday on Wallace on SteelersDepot.com laying out the scenarios that could take place going forward. And Adam Schefter, I'm not suggesting that he plagiarized or anything, but he had very much the same report today talking about things with Wallace. So let's open up with Mike Wallace. Because the player personnel issues are obviously more entertaining than talking about kind of the media shitstorm that's going on with who's running the Steelers these days. So wanted to give the people who might not have had a chance yet to read the Mike Wallace post the nuts and bolts of what an RFA is and what the options are for the Steelers before we get into how it might actually play out.
Yeah, Wallace is scheduled to be a restricted free agent, and there's all various types of tenders that you can put on a restricted free agent. Now, they did away with the new CBA. The top tender used to be involve a price tag, of course, and then compensation of a first and a third round draft pick. That is no more. The highest tender now you can give a guy is the first-round tender now. And this year, that tender amount's supposed to be around $2.742 million, right around in there. And a first-round draft pick as compensation, you know, should another team sign him away. So what the Steelers need to do when they if they do not get him signed to a new deal prior to the time they have to hand out these tenders, which is coming up fairly soon, you know, basically Wallace will be exposed to other teams. And you know, I wrote about in that arc. Now the other option that they have is they could go ahead, which is not normally the case with the Steelers and really any other team around the league for that matter, is to actually use a franchise tag, which is normally put on unrestricted free agents, and put that on Mike Wallace instead. Now that's going to carry a price tag of roughly around $9.4 million on it. But what it does is it gives you more of a layer of protection, because compensation, should Wallace end up signing with another team, would be two first-round draft picks. And that's more than enough to scare away a team. You know, one first-round draft pick's one thing. Giving up two first-round draft picks is another thing. So the only bad thing about putting that $9.4 million franchise tag on Mike Wallace is you've got to fit that underneath your salary cap, even when the new year starts, until you can hopefully get him signed to a longer-term deal, which would then, in fact, lower that $9.4 million salary cap hit in 2012. So that's the outline of the choices that they have on Wallace, and one of them, of course, is actually signing him to a long-term deal before they have to either tender him or tag him. Now, when you work outside of that, let's suppose that you place just the first-round tender on him that only requires a first-round draft pick as compensation. You have teams like the New England Patriots, the Cincinnati Bengals, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Baltimore Ravens, who I feel could all be players You know, in going after Wallace. Now, it should be noted that New England and Cincinnati both have two first-round draft picks. And, you know, and I broke down each of those situations, how they have the cap money available. One of the things, now, there are no more poison pills that you have to worry about in the new CBA. But what these two teams, New England and Cincinnati in particular, could do with the cap room that they have is they could front load this offer sheet and say put in there a $10 million roster bonus for the first year of the contract. Okay, and that's basically guaranteed money. The Steelers, when they have to match that offer sheet in order to retain Wallace. So if you're looking already at a contract, let's say it boils down to $2 or $3 million or so of a first year 2012 salary cap hit. Now, I'm not talking the whole total price of the contract here. I'm just saying how it's going to break down in the first year salary cap wise. When you add in, say, a $10 million roster bonus that's guaranteed on top of it, you're looking at a 2012 cap hit on Wallace of $12 million, and it could even be higher than that depending on what's put on the contract. There is absolutely no way that the Steelers could match an offer like that that would have them pay $12 million in 2012 against their salary cap for Wallace. So that's the outline of what we have to worry about here.
Dave, let me just say, I've got an opinion on this, but I'll throw it to you first. What is your best guess as to how this plays out?
The more I've thought about it, you can go back over time and say, look, nobody ever gives up a first-round draft pick, on these tenders and all like that. But, you know, there's a first time for everything. And Kevin Colbert's thrown out the idea that they're considering the franchise tag on top of it. The bad thing about it is they would have to cut, you know, there are going to be even a lot more cuts coming and possibly a few more if they have to fit that thing in. My best guess, David, right now is they are working their ass off right now to get Wallace signed to a new contract before they even get to this point. I think something similar happened to the Lions with Casey Hampton several years ago when it looked up going up to the last minute. Now, that, of course, Hampton was a unrestricted free agent at the time, but they came in at the last minute and were able to strike a long-term deal with Casey Hampton. They did not have to use the franchise tag on him, and instead they used a franchise tag on Jeff Reed. I think that's the best-case scenario, and I think that's what they're looking to do right now, and my guess is that that's what they're shooting for happening right now.
You think the kid is going to be wearing a Steeler uniform come September 5th or whatever the opening day is next year?
I really do. I've stood by this the whole time. Now, of course, when you get closer to the numbers and start breaking them down, looking at the cap situation bit by bit, I don't see how he can't be. They can't afford to lose him, and that's pretty much what Kevin Colbert said in these interviews, is they are going to protect their interest in Mike Wallace. So either he's foot-feeding a line of crap there and they're willing to throw him out there. They might not have a choice if they can't get a contract signed to throw him out there on the first-round tender. If they do, that's like that's like being at the craps table, man, and just throwing it out there, because it's not the 2.7 – something million that's the obstacle here. The obstacle is the other teams that could be interested in signing him away and whether or not they'd be willing up to get to give up a first round draft pick in the process. But I think it gets done.
We see so little of this type of activity. We hear it talked about a lot. It occasionally happens. Let me ask you this. Do you see a team? You know, look, we talked about it on Tuesday. New England is the obvious team. A, they have the need. B, they have the draft picks. This is a team that certainly could go out and make a play for Mike Wallace. I told you my thoughts on Wallace, and we've talked about his technique as a receiver. You know, there is room for growth there. Certainly his take the top off or, holy shit speed is something that is incredibly valuable around the league. But when you think about this, or when I think about this, I guess the question to me is, would somebody like New England roll the dice on a contract for Mike Wallace. And make sure I have my understanding correct here. The contract they offer against that the Steelers can match, it does not have to be a one-year deal. It can be a multi-year deal, right?
Oh, yeah, and it would more than likely be a multi-year deal.
Yeah, so let's say New England offers Mike Wallace $32 million for 4 years, $8 million a year. Do the Steelers even blink? Would a team like New England, or anybody else for that matter, offer something, maybe even a shorter-term deal so they don't hamstring themselves, maybe a one-year deal or a two-year deal for $20 million, to force the Steelers' hand, and if they get stuck with it, so be it, but it puts the Steelers in a tougher cap position. Do you think that game can be played in the NFL, or nobody's willing to take that risk unless they really want the player?
That's you're gambling with a lot there. Now what they write down on that offer sheet, I think they have to, you know, they've got to worry about their own cap and their future as well, instead of just going for, I see what you're getting at, they just want to go with the cock block here. To speak, and try to force the Steelers into making a decision they don't want to make, to severely cripple them cap wise, and to and make them cut more players to do it. You know, so do I think the Steelers? I think it all depends on what the terms of the offer sheet is. It's not like you can restructure an offer sheet to fit your own needs. You have to, if that offer sheet is signed, and here's the other thing too, Wallace is going to have to agree to the, you know, he's got to agree to the offer.
Correct.
You know, as well. So not only do you have to make that contract, let's take the Patriots, for example, not only is it got to be something that Wallace wants, you know, but, you know, it's got to be something that that the Patriots need to make sure that they can live with if the Steelers decline to match the offer.
Yeah. And so the question is, if you're New England, does it make sense to give up a number one to get a guy to pay $10 million for a guy like this? Or is that just a waste of time when you can go get DeSean Jackson or somebody else? You can go compete in the market for the other guys who are out there, depending on the kind of guy you're looking for. The fact of the matter is, when you think about a guy like Mike Wallace, you've got to remember there are guys out there who are just out there on contract deals, just money. You don't have to give up that number one. So at the end of the day, I come down where you do. I don't see this. I don't think this is going to happen. I'll tell you, I'll be really shocked. I mean, I would put this at below 10% that somebody comes in when the Steelers make their decision on how they're going to handle it, which I think will be the first round tender. And I don't see somebody coming in and doing it. So I think Mike Wallace will be there, and I think the Steelers are going to get. I'm not going to say get away with anything, but I think this is going to work out favorably for them in the long run.
But what about a team, and let's throw the Patriots out of this. Let's take a team like the Bengals, who have a crazy amount of cap space from what I understand. Not only could they take him away from the Steelers, they would then be flipping the tables on him on top of it. So, and it goes along what these two teams need in the draft as well, too. I'm talking about the Patriots and the Bengals. I mean, let's face it, the Patriots could use some help on defense, but they also have Wes Welker, who's an unrestricted free agent, who they got to make sure they have cap room for, which I think they could afford both Wallace and Welker, getting them done and all like that. So, I tend to think that I would say a little bit higher than 10%, but I wouldn't call it a 50-50 proposition right now.
Do you think it's higher than 10% that somebody comes in and offers a first-round pick and signs Mike Wallace to a contract?
Yes, but okay. I wouldn't rate it as high as a 50%. I would say there's a 25% chance. Let me throw that out there because of the four teams I think that could get involved with this. One good thing, as you said, though, David, too, is there's a lot of unrestricted free agent wide receivers floating around there, too. It's just how do you value Wallace in your offense compared to those guys, say, like Vincent Jackson, We don't know what's going to happen with DeSean Jackson. I believe he's restricted like Wallace is. There's a Marcus Colston that's going to be flying around out there as well, too. You have to stack these guys up and say, hey, if these guys are all going to cost pretty much near the same price, but we have to if their talent level is about the same and we can live with them talent level and they fit in our offense, then why would we give up a first-round draft pick in addition?
Right. That's at the end of the day why I think this isn't going to happen. So,
right. Are we overreacting? Yeah, perhaps. I love overreacting, especially when it comes to something like this. But, and Schefter's playing it up, and the guys on Sirius NFL Radio, Moving the Chains, are really playing this up as a real extreme possibility. Now, will it get to that point? Something tells me, though, David, that they're going to come in, and Omar's going to get this done on a last-minute deal before they even have to throw out one of these tags even out there. That's what I'm hoping for. That way they can work around his price tag then and then make their other cuts around already having knowing they've got his number put to bed.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Everybody is writing how the Steelers are just they're in a horrible financial shape. Somebody's comment earlier in the week on Twitter was they can't afford a cup of coffee right now. I think they're either 31st or 32nd in the league, or first or second above the cap, depending on how you want to look at it. I just don't see the dire straits. We've talked about guys that can be restructured. They obviously did some work already. They have other guys that they can do things with, including Ben, depending on what they decide to do with some of the linebackers like Ferrier and Foote, Casey Hampton. I do think the Steelers have plenty of options here. And even though they're, I guess, maybe $10 million above the number right now, I don't see this being dire straits. Am I off the mark here?
There's still a lot of stuff that's got to be done, man. And what's hampering it all is the biggest uncertainty with Wallace and what that number that you have to work with, starting off in March when you got to get down. I mean, let's face it, $9.4 million is a lot different than $2.7 million right there. So I think a lot of the fear surrounds around that. I mean, yeah, we still have possibly a Ben Roethlisberger restructure coming, a James Harrison restructure on the way. You could possibly, the cuts we've outlined still yet to come, possibly a Larry Foote, a Will Allen, a Jonathan Scott. You have Aaron Smith retiring. But there's only so much you can do, to a point here. So I think a lot of what they're waiting on is to see, and Chris Kimuatu too. I forgot to throw his name out there. That's a big number as well too that they could possibly eliminate. So I think a lot of what they're waiting on. And first too, Kevin Colbert, and I believe this, he does not know the true number yet that they need to be at. And they won't get that number until the beginning of March. Now they have a good grasp on what that number is going to be close to. I'm fairly certain. As do the other teams in the NFL. But I think a lot of what they're kind of waiting on is to see what they can do with Wallace first, because that's the biggest stumbling block and that's the biggest priority that they have as far as free agency goes right now. Now, the rest of the unrestricted free agents, they're just going to let walk anyway, and that's par for the course. Anybody that doesn't get a franchise tag, normally they allow test of waters. We've seen that the last couple of years, and over half of them end up coming back late in free agency. So to answer your question, I think that's the biggest holdup. I do think it still is a problem right now because the cuts have not been made. So until that happens, it's a problem.
As we go forward here, what would you expect? Is Ben the next guy on this list of things, or are we? How do you think this is going to play out in terms of cuts and contracts restructuring? If we're going to kind of play Omar Khan here and Kevin Colbert, which way is this going to go?
Well, the last thing you probably want to do, is restructure Ben, to keep throwing the money forward of the proration. So I believe that's somewhere in the middle of the pack. That's pretty much, basically the agents of Roethlisberger and Harrison have come out and said, hey, we're willing to do this if you need to do it. So they know they've got that chip, that money in the bank already, that in a worst case scenario, they could do that. Casey Hampton, You know, another two guys I want to talk about, David, Casey Hampton and Rashard Menendez. Both these guys are destined to start on the PUP list. If Hampton does not take the pay cut down to the minimum there, you've got to seriously consider just whacking this guy right off and saving yourself some money there. Rashard Menendez, if he's going to be out for 12 or 13 weeks of the season, and he's going to be although he would be unrestricted after this season as well. So he, you know, what do you do there when you basically could pay this guy for a season and get absolutely nothing and then him hit the unrestricted free agent market regardless? So outside of those two guys, I think you're going to have Aaron Smith retire. As I said, I think Chris Kimoata is going to get whacked. I think Jonathan Scott, I think you got to trim off the 2.2 that you can save there by cutting him. And Will Allen's the other one. And then you have the question marks with Hines Ward and Larry Foote. So that would be kind of my process, I guess, that I'm going through in my head.
Okay, well, you know, we know the date's coming up, and obviously this will be, even though as we talk about the offseason and the combine coming up, this is big stuff. And certainly the Steelers have been in this position, you know, locking Troy up at the end of last year. They got that done. They got those deals done in camp. And so, I think it's important to point out again that 2 years from now when these television contracts come in and who knows how much the cap goes up, we're going to be looking at a different landscape. And so certainly the Steelers, as they defer money, they are, that all points toward that season 2 years from now when that cap explodes, and we'll see how that plays out. But that is the leverage factor that I think gives them the window to get most of this stuff done without crippling the roster.
Yeah, one good thing, well, you're already having this switch, and you know it's going to happen anyway from an older roster to a younger roster. It might be accelerated a little bit more than they would like to this year, but, you know, that's the plan. Now, people always wonder, well, how did they get this situation in the first place? And Kevin Colbert's pretty much said, and you go back and look at the numbers, you know, the uncapped year of 2010, they've admitted to doing a couple of things that they normally wouldn't have done, salary cap wise, and kind of call it paying for your sins. Now, they knew this year would be the toughest of the years. They had a problem last year, but it wasn't as bad. They were able to retain the people that they wanted to retain, get some guys signed to extensions and do some restructures. This, I think, is the magical year, and we'll have to see how it shakes out, how 2013 shakes out after the numbers are all settled, by the start of the new year. But, this year was going to be the salary cap hell year. And as you stated, 2014, the new TV contracts kick in, and I think everything will be back to normal by then.
Let's move on to this, briefly to this management, this Ben Roethlisberger, Todd Haley thing. I had an acquaintance give me a heads up and said he was just sick and tired of hearing Ben whine to the media, kind of this passive aggressive thing about, he hadn't heard from Haley, and his comment was, why the hell can't Ben pick up the phone and call Haley? My take was, look, I don't think Ben's whining. He's being asked questions and he's answering them. When you go in, when you're interviewed all the time and you're going to ask these questions, you say, have you talked to Todd Haley? No, I haven't talked to him. I look forward to hearing from him, whatever it is. I didn't hear the interview myself that he was referring to. But I don't see this as a big deal. But I will say I'm a little surprised Todd Haley's been on the job a week. I would be surprised Todd Haley's been on the job 24 hours and hasn't given Ben Roethlisberger a call. I don't think this is grounds for anything. I don't think any messages are being sent. But having said that, I'm slightly curious to why he hasn't called him.
Well, I wrote an article on Wednesday about this called the Steel City Stare Down and how it needs to end soon. And I'm going to be on the opposite side of the fence for you. There's no reason that we should even be talking about this, in my opinion. Now, I know Haley has his head buried down in a dark film room somewhere. And Roethlisberger was in the building at least an hour before the Haley introductory press conference. I think both sides are posturing here, David. If you listen to the interview, Roethlisberger gave to Mike Pursuta earlier in this week as well. And if you go back and listen to the comments made by Todd Haley during his introductory press conference, saying how people are sensitive, this is not the play. They're not going to like it in this situation, something to those regards. Hey, don't both these guys own telephones? You know, we know Ben does. He's been calling everybody and their brother who's played underneath Haley. I assume Haley has access to a phone, somewhere. Why not? Why can't one of these guys? And hey, we don't know. We don't know exactly what's happened here. We don't know if that's meetings already taking place now. But, you know, why are we even talking about it? Why couldn't it have been said that, I've already picked up the phone and talked to Todd Haley. He didn't have time to sit down with me too terribly much because he's going through stuff getting ready for the combine and player evaluations. But I welcome him to Pittsburgh and look forward to working with him. Why hasn't there been something other that's counteracted that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd like to know the answer, but I don't think it's that big a deal. We'll leave it out there. we'll find out. I mean, he's going to get asked that question. So
what the hell? What the hell would we write about, David?
That's absolutely true. We would have less to write about. But so let's get further into this. And this goes, as I talked about in the opening, Kevin Colbert and even Art Rooney II have been out there making the rounds. And as you put it before we got on the air, it looks like there is a company line and they are sticking to it. And I guess the most important part of that company line is Todd Haley was hired by Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, and that's kind of what Rooney put out there. And he kind of pointed to two situations there. He, as far as the whole coaching change and all like that, he pointed to that Mike Tomlin, that the statement that was released about Bruce Arians hiring was a statement by Mike Tomlin. And he pointed to the introductory press conference where Mike Tomlin was the one to introduce Haley as head coach. Now, I have, over my years of being married for several years, I have learned good psychology over the years. Now, I am not dumb when it comes to that. That's all good and fine that he's putting it out there, though. But and I expect everybody to be toting the company line, and I expect Rooney to point to those two situations, and I expect me myself to even read too much into it all. But we don't have the full story here. I don't think. I'll still stand by. I think Arians retirement, firing, whatever you want to call it, had a strong hand of Rooney playing in that. No matter what anybody wants to say otherwise. And on top of it, I think a little bit of the Todd Haley hiring to some aspect, I think Rooney did have a role in it. So I might be overreacting. I might be reading too much into it. But to think that Rooney did not have any say in any of it or strong opinion in it, I think is kind of foolish.
I look at it is I think Art had a strong opinion about Bruce Arians. At the end of the day, I'm going to give the Rooney family and their policy and the way they've run this organization for, the last 40 years at least, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that this was Mike Tomlin's hire. Not that, at the end of the day, Mike Tomlin has bosses as well. And if he's making decisions that are going to significantly impact the football team, he better run them up the chain of command just to get clearance. It's just odd how it all went down. No question. I think, as I talked about the Arians retirement, firing, whatever, I think they were trying to be polite. It backfired on them. The Haley thing, I think the most curious thing about that whole thing is that they announced it on the website that they were interviewing him, and it's the only guy that they announced they were interviewing, and he obviously wasn't the only guy who was spoken to in the process. So, it's just odd. That's all I can say is, maybe somebody was doing somebody a favor to get his name back in circulation, and maybe he, knocked it out of the park in the interview. I mean, that's kind of the only thing that story sounds plausible to me.
Sure. Absolutely is plausible. And that's kind of what they're saying happened. Now, in the defense of the Rooney's and all like this too, now, we live in a world now with this social media where we, the fans and people on the outside, know things that happen 10 minutes after they happen, whereas it would have taken us a week before even longer to find out something has happened. You know, so it's easier to dissect every little move, every little radio interview, every word that's said. It's much easier for us to do that nowadays. So is what we're seeing here more of a result of more people having voices? And I'm talking about local media. I'm talking about bloggers. I'm talking about
you and I.
And even us, yeah, you know, we have more of a voice now to pick these things apart and create controversy and create, well, what about, you know, why isn't this happening, you know, whereas 15 years ago, we wouldn't have known any of this and speculation would have been just totally unfounded at that point, not saying that it's not now. So maybe this is the way the thing's been run all the damn time. We just have more information to break down and dissect now.
I think that's all true. I think, you know, we get news instantaneously. We get a lot of different opinions. A lot more people have voices. So, you know, we see all that out there. Getting into just a little bit more about this cap thing and, you know, getting back into the player stuff, one of the guys who was discussed about, and I don't know how far we've gone into this, but Willie Colon does not seem to be a guy. The Steelers wouldn't save a lot of money by moving on him, right? I think Jim Wexel tweeted that it was $900,000. As much as there are options that make a lot more sense than Willie Colon. Is that correct?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, how can you expect this guy? You just gave him a 5-year, and I wrote about this morning, is how, you know, you just gave the guy a 5-year, $29 million contract. He has an unfortunate injury week one. If you were that worried about him being injured and making too much money, why did you give him a 5-year, $29 million contract coming off an Achilles injury? Now, to the fact of whether or not you cut him and him not wanting to take a pay cut, I wouldn't take a pay cut. I would gladly throw out there that I'd restructure so I can put the money in my pocket. But the Steelers really don't, you know, to do a restructure and keep throwing money forward on someone like him just to save $1.425 million in cap space really doesn't make sense. Now, if you cut him, you know, everything's going to escalate and you're only going to save $900,000 in cap money. But think about the replacement cost of a player that's going to take his place on the roster of, let's say, $500,000. So, essentially, you've only saved $400,000 on a guy. And to me, that, you know, you're already kind of thin at tackle already right now. If Jonathan Scott's considered your key swing tackle right now on your roster, to me, it just does not make sense. And hey, Willie's, I have, you know, this is Jason Lockenfora reporting that Willie Colon's not taking a pay cut. I have not seen anywhere else where the words have come out of Willie Colon's mouth saying he's not willing to take a pay cut.
Willie Colon has shown to be a guy who wants to be on the Steelers and will, you know, work with the organization. I don't know that a guy should necessarily feel guilty for missing a lot of time and collecting paychecks, but, you know, I think Willie Colon's probably reasonably amenable to not necessarily taking a pay cut, but certainly as everybody else is, and as we've learned, when guys restructure their contracts without obviously taking a pay cut, it's a benefit to them. They get the money up front. So that, you know, that's generally a positive for the player. They're not bending to the team's wishes, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the Willie Colon thing plays out, because I think you and I both expect him to be the starting right tackle going into camp. You know, with flipping Gilbert over to the left side. So the offensive line is another area where, you know, we're going to see Jonathan Scott's, Max Starks is not going to be back. I don't expect Jonathan Scott to be back, although I'd say there is a small chance. I think Chris Kimoatu is the guy who will be interesting to see what they decide to do with him.
Let me tag you something else onto this Willie Colon situation, David. Remember that Willie Colon is the guy that got screwed out of an early unrestricted free agency, yep, as well in that in that uncapped year, because he was all set and ready to to be a unrestricted free agent. Then they changed those terms on there, and he ended up having to, you know, he ended up getting tagged instead, and he missed out. And then, of course, he got injured with the Achilles and all like that. He missed out on his payday. So he finally gets him a payday last offseason, and now already you're wanting to take that pay cut away from him. It's no wonder he does not want to take a pay cut, because he feels he's worked hard to finally get to that payday, and there ain't no way in hell he's going to give it back, especially being screwed out of free agency 1 year.
Yeah, I don't think we're talking about a monster thing, and I don't remember it, when he signed that contract, what the upfront money was, but you know, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, I'm generally in agreement with you. I don't think anybody's going to do that. The question is I guess I just don't see the Steelers cutting him unless he does not recover from this injury.
Oh no, absolutely. Supposedly he's 100% back and ready. Remember, he tore this week one against the Ravens. So I don't see. And be honest, Willie Colon takes a lot of flack, you know. But you know, when that guy is healthy, which we haven't seen in quite a while, you know, that I like what he does at right tackle. Let me just put it to you that way. And I think you could do a lot worse than Willie Colon. And there's absolutely no reason to be hating on him for not be willing to take a pay cut, in my opinion.
All right, Dave. So what else? I mean, anything else in the Steeler? We've had a couple of emails. Let's touch on a couple of those things.
Yeah, we have had a couple of nice emails, and we invite you to email the show at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You know, to pass on some questions, we'll read them on. We got one from Armando De Leon, who says, "Hello, Dave and Dave. Listen to the podcast." Let's see. He had a couple points he wanted to bring forth. The first is with the hiring of Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator. People tend to forget that it was Haley as the OC in Arizona that called a pass play from Warner to Fitzgerald in the Super Bowl that nearly beat the Steelers. I think Haley has the talent, and it might be worth dissecting that play, he says, soon on Steelers Depot. That, you know, might get around to actually being able to do that. That brought Steeler Nation to his knees. He says that was a pretty tough defense that saw Fitzgerald cakewalked into the end zone. His second point is Art Rooney, too, stating that Ben needs to tweak his game. One tweak I see, Ben is not taking as many sacks. In fact, do you know how many sacks Ben took on the opponent's side of the field that killed potential scoring drives or took the Steelers out of field goal range this past season? Those are both two great things to dissect. I've already started kind of dissecting the second one. I'm trying to update some of my charting and stats right now and get to where I can form an article around that. It's unfair to boil down Haley as offensive coordinator, I think, just to one play, Warner to Fitzgerald. You know, I think it's unfair to do that, but I will say that, and we've said this in previous podcasts, David, that Todd Haley has shown the ability to work around personnel and not so much work around scheme. So he's, you know, as far as him coming in, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what he does coming in with the Steelers and working around their personnel and not working around the scheme. So, you know, we've said in previous podcasts, we think Haley, you know, for us to say anything else, then let's give him a chance, and to get on the table right now and yell that this is a horrible hiring would be totally idiotic for us to do. So we agree, you know, to your point there. And I think Rooney, too, with the Ben tweaking of his game, I do agree that Ben does have to take less sacks, and I think that's going to be part of the onus that's put on Todd Haley to work on getting the ball out quicker, so he indeed is not taking that many sacks. So you got anything to chime in on top of that, David?
You know, I'm totally in agreement on the Haley stuff. I'm going to go in a different direction with this and ask you a question, and this is based on this email. Would Dick LeBeau's reputation be different if the Steelers lost that Super Bowl largely due to that Larry Fitzgerald play where they gave up the home run late in the game with a lead, and then they go in this game, you know, the Bronco game, the first play of overtime, they give up, and, you know, whatever it was, 80-yard touchdown or whatever it turned out to be. Is there anything to be read into that? Two monster plays and crucial moments at the end of the Steelers season, one of it which did end the Steelers season, one of them almost cost them a Super Bowl for a defense that never kind of gives up big plays to, in the most crucial moments, you know, two times in the last 5 years, giving up a monster touchdown.
Are you asking me how much more criticism LeBeau would have taken in that Super Bowl?
Well, or would he be taking now?
He's already taken hell now, adding damn number one damn defense last year. So, I could only imagine had the Steelers lost the Super Bowl to the Cardinals. You know, this I know our fan base is like every other one out there in some aspects, and they're absolutely brutal and stupid, if you want me to put it blunt. I mean, he would have taken hell for that, and if you would have compounded what happened this year on top of that, they'd be calling for his freaking head as loud as they were for the head of Arians, in my opinion. So
yeah, I think you might be getting some of that. You might be getting some more of that. I think because Ben DeSantonio got them a win back against Arizona. You know, that play doesn't feel as catastrophic, but it would if they had lost that game. The first thing I think everybody would have thought of. When Denver scored that touchdown, they would have gone right back to the Larry Fitzgerald play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then if you stack all that together, then you would have had a loss against Arizona in the Super Bowl. Then you end up losing to Green Bay in the Super Bowl, where they just got blistered by Aaron Rodgers. And then you turn around and get knocked out of the playoffs by Tim Tebow on a big play there. they've been brutal. Me personally, David, I'm not ready to throw Dick LeBeau out with the bathwater, until he's ready to be thrown out of the bathtub.
Yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere. Just another interesting kind of play. You look back in one play and you wonder if how much the world would be different. when a butterfly flaps its wings in Japan.
Well, we covered the Roethlisberger Manning, the draft and the Philip Rivers situation last week, I believe. How much of both these team seasons would have changed, the Steelers in particular, had they not, had they been stuck with Philip Rivers instead of Ben Roethlisberger? So, yeah, I guess that little butterfly flapping his wings, we don't know how big an impact it makes, but I bet it's making an impact somewhere,
Exactly.
And we got another email too from, it's Craig from Columbia, South Carolina, writes, about the Steelers' schedule, he says, can you please go over the 16 opponents and compare them to Baltimore's first-place schedule? One thing, Craig, that you need to know is that everybody in the AFC North plays the same schedule outside of basically two teams. And, both teams are going to play, I think it's the NFC, the East with Dallas and all in there. And they also are going to play the AFC West. So not only do they play in division twice against Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, both teams have got to play all four teams in the West, AFC West, all four teams in the NFC East. And where the only two teams that they differ on is the Steelers play the Titans, who finished second in the AFC South Division, and they also play the the New York Jets, who finished second in the AFC East. The difference is the Baltimore Ravens play the winner of the AFC East, which would be the Patriots, I believe, and then they also play the Houston Texans, who won the AFC South. So those are your only differences in the schedule, and that's the way it's designed. It's a rotating schedule that the NFL uses, and the only difference being is who they play in those last two games based on where those two teams finish in the division.
Huge win for the Steelers.
The way Houston's playing right now, I would much rather play Tennessee. And as far as the other team with the Jets, to be honest with you, I'd much rather play the Jets than I would the Patriots. So,
this is obviously things change over time, but, it's hard to, you know, hard to know exactly, you know, what we're going to be looking at. And we look forward and we look back and things are often very different. But yeah, if you could choose, that's why those teams won the division. You'd rather be playing the Steelers schedule than the Ravens schedule.
Absolutely. And Armando and Craig, we appreciate your questions. And anybody else that we've got a couple in here, I know that we probably have missed over. So if you don't think we've addressed it yet or might've missed over, feel free to fire it off again and all, as well, because you know, we're going to have some time to start reading these on the air and, as well. So, David, you got anything else?
I don't. I'm a little tired of the Peyton Manning talk. You know, I'm looking forward to getting into the combine stuff and the draft stuff as we move forward here. And as we, you know, as we've talked about, there'll be, you know, there'll be plenty of decisions made between here and mid-March. So obviously, we'll keep everybody up to date on that and give our thoughts on everything that Kevin, Omar, and the crew come up with.
Absolutely, and I'll be the NFL Combines next week. I'll have all that stuff up on SteelersDepot.com, so be on the lookout for that. You can follow David on Twitter, at Hammer Speaks. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes as well and post a comment up on there as well, good or bad. And as I mentioned, you can email the show, theterriblepodcast, at gmail.com.
All right. Great stuff as always. And thank you for listening. Shoot us an email, as Dave said, and we'll get back to you on Tuesday. Enjoy the long weekend. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.